John, middle initial A, Daniels, D-A-N-I-E-L-S.
Thank you. You may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, for this specific case, were you personally involved in Rachel Anderson's autopsy?
I was not.
Did we have a request of you?
Yes.
And what was that request?
The request was to examine the report that was made by Dr. Donald Poyman, who did the autopsy, and basically review it and testify to Dr. Poyman's observations in court.
Now, to be fair, I don't want to speak poorly of Dr. Poyman. Did he have some medical issues and is no longer with the coroner's office?
Yes, Dr. Poyman had medical issues and is no longer with the coroner's office.
Okay. And did you have an opportunity to review his documentation, the report, and the photographs that he took or someone took during his examination?
Yes, I did.
And did it appear as though he followed that general procedure that you previously outlined for the jury with the external exam and the internal exam?
Yes, he did.
We have State's Exhibit V2 up on the screen. Would you explain for the jury what we're looking at in State's Exhibit V2?
We are looking at the upper chest, shoulders, face, and neck of the decedent.
And do we know it's the same Rachel Anderson because of that unique number?
Yes.
Okay. I noticed that the front of her body, or what I would call the front of her body there, appears to be discolored. Can you explain that to the jury, please?
That is livor mortis. At the time of death, all circulation stops. With time, blood in the small blood vessels of the skin and in the organs will settle to the lowest points because of the force of gravity. As it does so in the skin, it will change the skin first from a faint red to a darker red, ultimately to a dark purple. Early on in that process, the blood is still liquid, so you could have someone lying on their back, and if you turn them over, the blood would then follow the force of gravity to the front. Ultimately, livor mortis becomes fixed, and what that means is that the blood in the small blood vessels of the skin coagulates and remains in that position, indicating the position the body was in.
So in this particular instance, the jury has seen photographs of Ms. Anderson face down or laying on her stomach with her arms and legs behind her. Would this be consistent with her being in that position?
Yes, it would.
I also note there is something on her nose.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that, please?
That is an abrasion. An abrasion is a lesion that is caused by something forcibly pulling across the surface of the skin and removing a portion of the epidermis superficial layers. The red is a small amount of hemorrhage.
If there had been something across her nose, like a cord or something like that at the scene, is that mark consistent with that?
Yes.
Okay. Moving ahead to State's Exhibit V3, can you tell the jury what's in this photograph, please?
This is a laceration. A laceration is an injury caused by a blunt force. It has an irregular edge. There is a margin at the edges of the tissue, which are described in the autopsy report. This blunt force injury apparently extends all the way through the scalp, as described by Dr. Poyman, down to the bone.
So when you say extends down into the scalp, what do you mean?
It extends through all the layers of the scalp, the skin and the subcutaneous tissues, down to the bone. It is located, by the way, near the vertex of the head, near the top of the head.
I was just going to say, you're kind of pointing to the top of your
head.
Yes. So the laceration itself goes down to her skull. Okay. And you mentioned it being a blunt impact.
Blunt impact.
How do you know that?
By its appearance and by the description Dr. Poyman gave to me. His description, excuse me. He describes it as there are abrasions on both margins. and there is tissue bridging deep within the wound. This, by definition, makes it a laceration. A laceration is caused by a blunt impact of the skin, not a sharp object, but a blunt object. It causes the tear in the skin by stretching the skin beyond its tensile strength, and then the skin tears.
So some sort of force with a blunt object to
yes.
the skin.
Yes.
Was there any associated underlying injury?
Yes. Beneath the scalp, there was a hemorrhage associated with this wound that measured, in the report, 2 by 2 centimeters.
So bleeding underneath.
Bleeding underneath.
Was this injury that we see in State's Exhibit V3 enough to kill Rachel Anderson?
No.
What kind of physical impact could this have had on her?
This could stun someone. And I can't really suggest how much it might stun someone, but
that's okay.
It's a blow to the head.
All right. I would like to talk about our next two photographs together, if we could. To make it easier for you, I'll do one at a time. State's Exhibit V4. Looks like it is her left leg.
Yes.
Could you let us know what we're seeing in this photograph and what was documented with regard to her left leg?
This is described as a group of thin erythematous skin depressions. Erythematous is just a medical term meaning reddened skin depressions encircling the ankle and above the ankle. They're depressed, they're reddened, they are horizontally oriented, and they're about a quarter inch in width.
Was there any bruising in that area?
There are some patchy ecchymoses as described. Ecchymosis is a word for bruise. You can see some here and here and perhaps here.
What do the, I'm going to use the non-medical terminology, the red depressions and the patchy bruises on her left ankle tell you about what her heart was doing when those were inflicted?
Well, bruises are caused by breaking small blood vessels under the skin, and they will bleed under the skin. If the heart is beating at the time the force to cause a bruise occurs, a bruise will develop, as we've all seen them, red, blue, and eventually disappear over time. If the heart is not beating, there will be no hemorrhage in the skin because there's no active circulation, and there will be no bruise.
Moving on to States V5, taking a look at her right ankle. Can you tell us what, if anything, was found there?
Again, as described, there's a group of depressed erythematous, that is red, skin depressions. Dr. Poyman mentions again there's some patchy ecchymoses, and these are primarily horizontally oriented.
Patchy ecchymoses, patchy bruises?
Yes.
Same question about her heart, still beating in order for that to happen?
Still beating in order for that to happen.
At the scene, the jury has seen that there was a cord around her ankles. Are these marks that we see on both V4 and V5 consistent with something being wrapped around her ankles?
Yes.
Moving on to State's Exhibit V6. And I'm going to do V6 and V7 together since they both appear to be her left wrist. I'll back up for you, Doctor.
Yes.
V6.
Yes.
And then V7.
These are described as several erythematous lines, again, red lines. Here, here, perhaps here, which are depressed and go around the wrist.
And you had said, I think you used the word, which medical word did you use? I missed it.
Erythematous, they're reddened.
Thank you, reddened. Same kind of question. Would it be reddened if her heart was not beating?
No.
V8, I think, is this her right wrist? No, left. Sorry, I can't keep my right and my left together. So would this also be just a different view of those marks you were
yes,
talking about?
Yes, and we can see those marks here and there. And a bruising, area of bruising here.
V9.
There's the right hand.
Sorry.
And it appears to be right hand. And again, these are described as four erythematous lines and skin depressions, that is red lines and skin depressions. And on the back of the wrist, there is an erythematous line also.
And V10.
Yes.
Same kind of thing. That
we- Same kind of thing, yes.
And again, in order to leave those red marks or bruising, her heart would still have to be beating?
It would.
Now, again, similar to the ankles, the jury has seen some photographs where her hands were bound as well. Are these lines consistent with that?
Yes, they are.
Okay. I would like to move on to Rachel's mouth, if we could. I'm going to look at State's Exhibit V11. Would you let the jury know what we're looking at in V11, please?
What we are looking at are the upper teeth and the upper lip and the gingiva of the upper jaw and the upper lip.
And is there anything of note in State's Exhibit V11?
This is called the frenulum. It is a piece of tissue that extends out like a thin membrane at the top of this space. It's very thin, and it can be torn with injury to the upper lip. What you see here, though, is it is torn. So some sort of force was applied to this portion of the body.
Now, do you see any hemorrhaging or bleeding here?
There is no hemorrhaging at this site.
What, if anything, does that tell you medically?
It tells me that when this tissue was torn, the deceased did not have any active circulation. She was dead.
There was evidence from the scene that she had an object or pantyhose in her mouth, would that be consistent with that injury?
Yes, it could be.
Could be other things.
Yes.
Okay. But because there's no hemorrhage, it would have been after death?
After death.
How about State's Exhibit V12?
This is the lower teeth, lower lip, and on the mucosal surface, we see these hemorrhages. What that represents is the lower lip being forcibly pressed against the teeth. So you could think of these as bruises on the inside of the lip. They occur when there is active circulation.
So pre-mortem, before death?
Yes, before death.
What kind, I think, I apologize if you said that, what can cause those kinds of injuries?
An impact or...
Your Honor.
Yes. You mind if we take a quick break?
Not at all. All right. We're going to go ahead and take our afternoon break at this time. The direct examination of Dr. Daniels. You may inquire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Daniels, I'd like to move on to the back of Rachel's neck, please. Were there any injuries to the back of her neck?
There were none recorded.
Okay. Was there...
Well, none. Okay. There were no ligature marks recorded.
Okay, and we'll get back to that in a minute. Were there any other injuries to the back of her neck?
There was one injury to the back of her neck.
Would you please explain that for the jury?
There was what we call a sharp force injury to the back of the neck, and in fact, it is a stab wound.
We have State's Exhibit V13 up there. Can you use your laser pointer and show us what we're talking about?
So this is a stab wound.
And then I'm going to move ahead to V14. What is that?
This is a close-up of the stab wound, and in this case, you can see it has a slight J shape.
Okay. And what, if anything, does that slight J shape tell you?
That results when a knife blade is inserted or a sharp instrument is inserted into the body and then turned, either being while in or partially withdrawn and turned. It gives that J shape to the, generally one end and usually the blunt end of the stab wound.
Okay. And were there any corresponding internal injuries for this stab wound?
Yes, there were.
Can you explain those for the jury, please?
Okay. There was a skull fracture on the floor of the skull at the back. The technical term for that area is called the posterior cranial fossa. It was on the left. It's the base of the skull where the cerebellum, the small lobe of the brain, sits. As described by Dr. Poyman, there was a fracture, a linear fracture, and then there was a 9 millimeter by 1 millimeter rectangular fracture that extended to the foramen magnum. The foramen magnum is that opening in the base of the skull that the brainstem and the spinal cord pass through. Dr. Poyman also indicated that one of the wound tracks passed through the cerebellum, the left cerebellar hemisphere, and that there was a secondary track that went into the internal capsule. When he means the internal capsule, he's referring to the area around nuclei within the center of the brain.
So if I understand what you're saying, the stab wound that we saw in V13 and 14 went through her skull, fractured part of her skull, and into her brain.
Yes.
Then the portions you described there. Did it also break off a piece of her skull?
There was a portion of that fracture that that was loose within the skull, yes.
And what, if anything, does that tell you about the force?
Well, that portion of the floor of the skull is fairly thick. And I can't quantify by a number.
Sure.
But it requires a fair amount of force to be able to penetrate the skull in that way and then to be able to break off a piece.
That injury, the stab wound to the back of her head and into her brain, was that enough to cause her death?
That would be enough to cause her death over time.
Tell me what you mean by that, please.
The portions of the brain that were injured wouldn't necessarily cause instant death. But unattended, an injury like that would result in the brain's reaction to injury, further hemorrhage, and probably swelling. All the constellation of those reactions to injury would ultimately cause death. It could result in unconsciousness, but immediate death, not so much.
Okay. Now, was there an injury, though, that you did identify as you went through this review that did cause her death?
Yes, the ligature marks and the compression of the neck and the asphyxia with it would and can cause a death on at a much shorter time period.
Okay, let's talk about State's Exhibit V15 then. What does the jury see in this photograph, please?
What you're seeing are two brown ligature marks. He describes this as two groups of yellow-brown skin furrows across the anterior, the front aspect of the neck. The ligature marks consist of a horizontally oriented abrasion that varies in width about a quarter to a half inch. And below that is a second horizontally oriented abrasion. So the first is about here, and then the second seems to go across here with a slight gap.
Is there any way for you to tell whether that was one loop or two?
No. It could be one loop that then was loosened, slipped upward, and then was tightened again, or it could be two loops.
Okay. And was there any corresponding ligature mark, I have to use the right terminology now, to the back of her neck?
No, there was not.
And can you explain how that might happen?
That could happen when the ligature is not wrapped around the neck, but is simply pulled across the front and the sides and then pulled directly backward. That can happen either with it being pulled directly backward, or it can happen with suspension where the individual is face down and the ligature is being pulled upward.
Could things like Rachel's hair, or if there was an object back there, like clothing or pantyhose or something, also impact that?
Yes, something soft would prevent the ligature from making a distinctive mark.
Okay. Moving on to State's Exhibit V16.
This is the left side of the neck. We can see a ligature mark here. We can see another one here.
And then V17.
Right side of the neck. Again, seeing the ligature marks lower and upper, both of them ending just below the angle of the jaw on the right side.
And are both of those just the sides, the continuation of what we saw on the front of her neck?
Yes, they are.
Okay. When Dr. Poyman took a look at the structures of her neck underneath those marks, was there any underlying injury there?
Yes, there was.
Can you explain that to the jury, please?
Okay. When a neck is compressed by any mechanism, if it's compressed severely, the muscles, we call them the strap muscles of the neck, and the soft tissues can have bleeding within them. Dr. Poyman noted that there was, on the right side of the neck, there was a small amount of hemorrhage at the insertion of the sternocleidomastoid muscle. The sternocleidomastoid muscle.
You're going to have to spell that.
And the sternocleidomastoid muscle goes from the mastoid process under the ear, comes down at an angle, and it ties into the clavicle and the sternum. There is a portion where it ties into the clavicle and the sternum, and there was hemorrhage down at that lower portion of it on the right. On the left side, there was hemorrhage again in that same muscle on the left side with more hemorrhage, again, at its lower portions.
And in order for both the marks that we saw and for that hemorrhage, her heart would have had to have been beating, at least initially. What, if anything, do those marks or the underlying hemorrhaging tell you about force?
Well, it tells me that there was certainly sufficient force to compress the blood vessels. It tells me there is sufficient force to cause small blood vessels in the muscles and the soft tissue to rupture and bleed. Hanging deaths or strangulation deaths or deaths due to neck compression by any mechanism often occur due to the lack of blood to the flow to the brain. This can occur by squeezing the neck in some way and obstructing the veins, draining the blood from the head. And it may take maybe 5 pounds of pressure at most to do that. Also, the carotid arteries, one on each side, which are sending blood to the brain, can be compressed it's generally accepted between 5 and 10 pounds of pressure. In either case, there's a lack of blood flow to the brain, and in a few minutes, the brain becomes anoxic and begins to die.
So you mentioned a few minutes there. So in order for, without a specific number, it would take minutes for someone to die via strangulation.
Well, it would take minutes for them to suffer irreversible brain injury.
Okay. And that would happen before, obviously, they then die.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me. Now, is there any way for you to tell medically if, so in that situation, we're talking about pressure on the neck for that entire time, right? Minutes like that.
Yes.
Is there any way for you to tell medically if that pressure has been released and reapplied multiple times or even just once?
There are a couple indications. Pinpoint hemorrhages above the level of the ligature are noted to occur mostly with release of pressure and then reapplication of pressure. With that, you can see that with application of pressure, blood flow might stop, and pressure can build up in the small blood vessels. Pressure is released around the neck, blood flows again, it's reapplied, small blood vessels become engorged again. With that, with a couple of cycles of that, these small blood vessels in the skin and in the soft tissues will rupture and cause bleeding.
And can you also see evidence of that in, you said pinpoint hemorrhages, can you also see it inside the eyes?
Yes, you can.
Okay, evidence of that compression, release.
Yes.
And did Rachel Anderson show signs of either of those?
Yes, she did.
Okay, if we may, we have State's Exhibit V18. What are we looking at here, please?
What we are looking at is a close-up of the left eye. Here's the eyebrow. This is the inside of the lower eyelid. In the report, this is called the palpebral conjunctiva, and it is engorged with blood. It is hemorrhagic.
Okay.
What we also see are these little pinpoint hemorrhages throughout this area. Their medical term for that is petechial hemorrhages. They're pinpoint, and in this case, are a result of small blood vessels breaking in the skin because of the pressure of blood flow being backed up by compression of the neck.
And then moving on to V19.
This is the upper outer portion of the left eye. You can see the conjunctiva on the surface of the eye is congested and that there is hemorrhage under the upper eyelid.
Now you mentioned congested. What does that mean?
The blood vessels are overfilled with blood.
Now can that happen? Is there a way to tell whether or not that was before or after her death? The congested part.
The congested part. Someone face down can have some congestion of the conjunctiva, that
okay.
That lining over the eye.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're being clear.
Right.
You also pointed to a darker area.
Hemorrhage.
Sorry.
Here.
Yes.
And that is similar to the area under the left, under the lower eyebrow, eyelid.
Is that area that's underneath that you just pointed to, underneath her top eyelid,
thank you.
And the part that was on the bottom.
Yes.
Are those different than congestion?
Yes.
And can you, I know you talked about the blood vessels bursting and things like that. So would those other injuries, not the congestion, have been before she died?
I would believe so, yes.
Okay. And then on her other eye, do we see the same kind of evidence?
Yes. It's less pronounced, but under the lower eyelid, we see similar hemorrhages.
And those hemorrhages, not the congestion, and the petechiae around her eye, are those consistent with what you previously explained for the jury of the compression-release?
They would be consistent with a mechanism like that, yes.
Okay. Are they consistent with struggling?
Yes.
Dr. Daniels, was there also a toxicology screen completed?
Yes, one was completed.
Is that done in every case?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And were there any results of significance in her toxicology screen?
Of significance, no.
Okay. She had maybe a little bit of marijuana in her system?
There was, and some marijuana metabolites, and an extremely low level of ethanol, that is drinking alcohol.
Okay. Are either the level of marijuana or the metabolites or the alcohol anything that would have incapacitated her?
No.
Okay. And when Dr. Poyman went through the rest of the examination of Ms. Anderson, did he identify any other kinds of conditions or naturally occurring medical illnesses that could have caused Rachel's death?
No, he did not.
Can you let this jury know, please, what did Dr. Poyman rule as the cause and manner of Rachel's death?
Dr. Poyman ruled cause of death to be stab wound of the head and neck, and manner of death to be homicide.
Okay. Now, I think you maybe flipped those a little bit. Can you tell me about that?
Well, on the death certificate, there is also a section called other significant conditions. In toto, Dr. Poyman said, cause of death, stab wound of the head and neck, other significant condition, ligature strangulation, and manner of death, homicide. Between pathologists, we often may disagree on small points.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
If I had done this case, I might have reversed stab wound and ligature strangulation in their positions, but they're both significant.
And then what was the manner ruled then?
The manner is ruled homicide.
Okay. And then you had mentioned you might have flip-flopped, but ultimately those main findings, the stab wound and the ligature, were those findings consistent with your review of his?
Oh, absolutely. And again, they're both significant findings.
All rise for the jury. You may be seated. It's my understanding that you have reached a verdict.
Yeah.
All right. Ms. Harper, please. Count one, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of aggravated murder as he stands charged in count one of the indictment. Specification two, furthermore, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count one, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit, or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated burglary, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification three, furthermore, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count one, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit, or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit kidnapping, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification four, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count one, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit rape, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification five, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count one, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated robbery, and the defendant personally committed to each act which constituted aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson, and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count two, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of aggravated burglary as he stands charged in count two of the indictment and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count three, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of aggravated murder as he stands charged in count three of the indictment. Specification two. Having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count three, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated burglary, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification three. We, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count three, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit kidnapping, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification four, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as he stands charged in count three, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit rape, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification five, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count three, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated robbery, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count four, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of kidnapping as he stands charged in count four of the indictment, and then what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count five, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of aggravated murder as he stands charged in count five of the indictment. Specification two. We, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count five, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated burglary, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification three, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count five, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit kidnapping, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification four, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count five, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit rape, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification five, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count five, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated robbery, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson, and again, what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count six, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of rape as he stands charged in count six of the indictment and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count seven, guilty. We, the jury, being duly impounded and sworn, do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of murder as he stands charged in count seven of the indictment. Excuse me. Specification two, we, the jury, having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count seven,
find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated burglary, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 3, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 7, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit kidnapping, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 4, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 7, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit rape, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 5, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 7, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated robbery, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson, and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count 8, guilty. We the jury being duly impounded and sworn do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of robbery as he stands charged in count 8 of the indictment, and what appeared to be 12 signatures. Verdict, count 9, guilty. We the jury being duly impounded and sworn do find the defendant Anthony Pardon guilty of aggravated murder as he stands charged in count 9 of the indictment. Specification 2, we the jury have found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 9, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated burglary, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 3, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 9, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit kidnapping, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 4, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 9, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit rape, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson. Specification 5, we the jury having found Anthony Pardon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of aggravated murder as charged in count 9, find Anthony Pardon guilty of purposely causing the death of Rachel Anderson while committing or attempting to commit or fleeing immediately after committing or attempting to commit aggravated robbery, and the defendant personally committed each act which constituted the aggravated murder of Rachel Anderson, and what appeared to be 12 signatures, and all the verdict forms are dated with today's date. Does anyone wish the jurors to be polled?
Yes, Your Honor, on behalf of Anthony Pardon.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, all I'm going to do is ask you if this is your verdict, and all you need to do is just say yes or no, okay? So as to juror number 1, is this your verdict?
Yes.
As to juror number 2, is this your verdict?
Yes.
2, okay, yes.
Yes.
Juror number 3, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 4, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 5, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 6, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 7, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 8, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 9, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 10, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 11, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Juror number 12, is this your verdict?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for this very, very difficult job. In a moment, I am going to excuse you. But your responsibility to this case continues and remains. This is likewise even for the alternate jurors. Okay, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. All right, this time,
Anthony Pardon would like to give a statement. Pardon, like I said, my name is Anthony Pardon. You have heard from a lot of people, family members, the DA, Mr. Dixon, and Mr. Thomas. So now I'd like to give you a chance to hear from me. I really wish we could be young. I really wish this was different. And we was meeting under different circumstances. But I want you to understand this. My mother took the witness stand. She gave the testimony. And I want you to understand that she wasn't the best mother. I want everybody to understand that she was not the best mother. But she did what she had to do. My sister, my brothers, they wasn't the best. But we did what we had to do. A lot of things you didn't hear, a lot of things you probably won't hear about me or my family. But I want you to know this. Eric Barton was my dad. I love my dad, but I hated my dad. Two people made me who I am today, and I blame that on my dad and the sister. I was raised by the sister, and I was raised by an abusive father. I used to witness my mother beat my mother like a dog. And my mother told you she pulled a gun on me one time, and she did. But I always wondered why she never pulled that gun on him and pulled the trigger. Because if anybody ever beat me like that, I would have did it. They say, my sister said my mother left us. She did. She left us too late. I would have been gone. I would have told my mother I would have been gone. Every day I came home, my father found some reason to beat me, my brothers, not my sister, but my mother, my brothers. And it just seemed like it got worse and worse and worse. My father beat me so bad one time that the lady next door threatened him to call the police to make him stop. He beat me with a band belt. Another time he beat me with a pool stick so bad I got the scars on my back. A piece of the pool stick lodged in my back. And because my grandmother and them were so scared of my father, when we got to the hospital, they told everybody that I fell on a stick, and that's how it happened. But every day, it seemed like it just got worse and worse and worse. It just got worse too bad to the point where me and my sister just ran away. We didn't know where we was going. We just ran away. Police found us walking a mock road. We didn't know where we was going. We just go run away to get away from it. He drank and somebody gonna get it. For no reason, it seemed like he just drank and somebody was gonna get it. And they locked my mama up. After they locked my mama up, I went to Foster Home, Franklin Village, the Hilltop. I'd have been in every lockup on the Hilltop. For some of y'all that can remember back in the day. There wasn't nothing on the Hilltop. From the Hilltop to the top of the hill to Wheatman was lockups. TCY, BYC, TCO. I've been on all, every one of them. And then one day, prison. I went to prison. I looked up and I was going to prison with the big boys. Manfield. With the big boys. No more little boy stuff. Big boys. 17. 5'5", 125 pounds. And like my mother said, I used to box. I thought I was bad. I was tough Tony. But nobody do nothing to me until I got the man's view. And that's when everything changed. Mansfield was a place that you had to be there. You had to actually be there. And I know some of y'all have seen the movie Shawshank with Morgan Freeman. The way they portrayed that prison, that's how it was in Mansfield. That's just how it was. When you walked through the gates, you was a big boy. You wasn't a little boy no more. Didn't nobody care I was 17. Didn't nobody care I was the youngest person there. Didn't nobody care I was the smallest person there. All I was a victim. And somebody was going to pray. And it happened. And just when I thought it couldn't get no worse, Lucasville. That's the worst of the worst. Lucasville. I learned how to be everything I am in Lucasville. People talk about knives and shanks. In Lucasville, you was going to get a shank or you was going to get shanked. That's how it was, ladies and gentlemen. I made no apologies for it. I had to adapt to where I was. Again, wasn't no little boys there. You was a grown man. A grown man. Three shadows. Screams. Everybody walking by. Nobody stopped. Officers turned a blind head. They didn't care. I'll never forget that day. It was 1995, December 22nd, right before Christmas, 1985. Right before Christmas. Them screams, them people walking by, them three shouts, them people in the safe doing what they was doing to me. Did anybody care? No. No. Pull your pants up, man. Get on back out there, man. Do what you got to do. You ain't going to no infirmary. It is what it is. Was I proud of some of the things I had to do? No. I did it to survive. I do it again. It was what it was. That's how we looked at it at Lucasville. You didn't go to the officers to tell nobody. You didn't go to the administration. You didn't go to your buddies. They couldn't do nothing for you. Pull your pants up, man. Man up. That's what they told you. Man up. It was what it was. So when you hear these stories about Shanks and Anthony Pardon's conduct, Anthony Pardon adapted to where he was. He was in the jungle. That was the jungle. So I adapted. I didn't do a good job at it, but I did what I had to do to survive, to make it up out of there. And I said, if I walk out of here, no matter what, the day I walked out of prison, no matter what happened, no matter what I endured, I made it. I don't care how much time it took for me, I made it. All I wanted to do was just make it out of there. And when I got out, didn't nobody give me nothing. I didn't get no programs. I got $75 and a bus ticket back to where I came from. The inner cities of Columbus, Ohio, the North End, the projects. To a mother that didn't have nothing. Sister was on crack. Brother was on crack. I walked everywhere I went. I couldn't get no job. Every job I got, my background, we got to let you go. Got to let you go, man. You're a good worker, but we got to let you go. Dr. Stinson said it didn't surprise him that I'm here today. Don't surprise me. But everybody blamed Anthony Pardon. You can blame me. I made choices. The choices I made, I blamed those choices. I made those choices. I never said I did. I made the choices I made in life. Some of them was bad. Some of them was good. But I made a lot of bad choices in my life. But people blame you. You can blame me for that. And Dr. Stinson told me, when I talked to him, I didn't want to open up to people. I'm not good at that. This is the first time that anybody has ever, probably, I've never even told my mother some of the stuff I'm telling you today. Never. I was too ashamed of it. But like I said, nobody gave me nothing. No programs, no nothing. When I got out of prison, it was back to where I came from. My life was hell. My daddy, like I said, my daddy was ill. He was ill. I'm happy my daddy is gone. I'm happy. I'm happy he is gone. And like I said, some of the choices I made was just terrible. And somehow I'll never forget it. One of my counselors told me, he said, Anthony, you don't plan to fail. You keep failing to plan. I want to tell you, hey, what if I ain't got no plans? What if I ain't got no plans? Then what am I going to do? I'm destined to fail anyway. I ain't got no plans. Plans to do what? To do what? What am I going to do? I'm a sex offender. Nobody want me living next door to them. You wouldn't want me living next to you. So what plans do I got? I ain't got no plans. I ain't got no plans. I never did have a plan. It was come out and do whatever you do. And just hope you make it. Like I said, I'm not asking you to accommodate my physical scars. I'm not asking you to do that. But I'm asking you to don't look past. I told my attorney the other day, I said, you know what? Members and ladies of the jury, if you take a dog, if you take a puppy, go buy you a puppy. Go buy you a puppy. Please, go buy you a puppy and put him in your backyard for 38 years. 38 years, change him in your backyard. And one day on the 38 years, take him in your house. I ain't got to tell you what he's going to do. I ain't got to tell you what he's going to do. But I ask you this. When he do what he doing that, be understanding. Because you helped create that. That's what you created when you left him out there for 38 years. So I respect any decision that you made, any decision that you will make. And like I said, I wish we could meet under different circumstances. But it is what it is. And that's the story of Anthony Park. That's me. Foster home. The people didn't care about me. All they cared about was they get the check. That's all they cared about. As long as that check was rolling in, it was all good. As soon as I wouldn't comply with telling lies to the council to get more money, to get more food stamps, out I went. You got to go from here, buddy. You got to go. You know, I feel failed. The prison system failed me. Social service failed me. Everybody. I just wanted you to know that me. I didn't want you to keep hearing it from everybody else. I wanted you to hear it from together. They went through it. I was the guy that went through it. Not them, not these people here, not you. So can't nobody tell a story like I'm telling it. And I don't have nothing out there for them. Like I said, I respect any decision that you've already made and any decision that you have made. I know you'd rather be out there doing other things than sitting here listening to me. But I wanted you to hear straight from me. Forget what everybody else told you. I'm telling you what it is. And I'm telling you how it was and what I went through. Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Stephen L. McIntosh presiding.
Thank you, everyone. You may be seated. This is my first opportunity to say, well, now, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
It's my understanding that you have reached a verdict in this case. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Harper. Verdict form, 1B.
We, the jury, being deadlocked and unable to agree on whether the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond reasonable doubt, hereby unanimously return the following life sentence, life imprisonment without parole, and what appear to be 12 signatures. Verdict 3B, we, the jury, being deadlocked and unable to agree on whether the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond reasonable doubt, hereby unanimously return the following life sentence on count 3, life imprisonment without parole, and what appear to be 12 signatures. We, the jury, being deadlocked and unable to agree on whether the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond a reasonable doubt, hereby unanimously return the following life sentence on count 5, life imprisonment without parole, and what appear to be 12 signatures. Verdict 7B. We, the jury, being deadlocked and unable to agree on whether the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond a reasonable doubt, hereby unanimously return the following life sentence on count 7, life imprisonment without parole, and again, what appear to be 12 signatures. Verdict 9B. We, the jury, being deadlocked and unable to agree on whether the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond a reasonable doubt, hereby unanimously return the following life sentence on count 9, life imprisonment without parole, and what appear to be 12 signatures. All the verdict forms are dated today's date, the 20th of February. Either side wish the jurors to be polled.
State just would thank the jury for their service in this case.
All right. On behalf of the defendant.
Your Honor, the defense feels the same way. We do not wish the jurors to be polled. We would like to also thank the jurors for their service.
Okay. Thank you very much.